officer who was standing a few meters away. "Where am I?" Hass asked weakly.
"In the prisoner's med bay of the Executrix," the officer said. "Currently in stationary orbit above Salient One."
The human closed on the foot of Hass's cot.
"You've spent a week in a Bacta tank, and here you are. Nearly as good as new."
Hass realized that he was in red prisoner's garb, his hands and feet secured in electrocuffs. His still bleary eyes went to the blue and red rank insignia squares affixed to the officer's gray tunic.
"You're Moff Tarkin," he said.
A brief look of surprise tweaked Tarkin's severe features.
"I'm encouraged to learn that your brain remains in working order."
"What's left of it," Hass managed. "No thanks to you."
Tarkin studied him openly.
"Admiral Utu's strike on the valley wall was very precise. Her turbo laser stitched a line of destructive energy along the eastern escapement that brought the roof down on all of you who had been sheltering beneath it. Initially, I wasn't concerned with possible survivors, but in the interest of seeing what we caught, I ordered Utu's rummager droids to have a look around. You were discovered in a cavity that had formed in the rubble and carried out to the valley floor, where, of course, you were promptly airlifted and taken into custody."
Hass had no memory of any of it.
"Why did you bother going to so much cost?"
he asked, motioning with his chin to the back to treatment ward.
"In the interest of speaking with you, before you begin what will undoubtedly be a lengthy prison term."
Hass was too weak to care.
"In that case, prepare yourself for a one-sided conversation."
Tarkin shrugged.
"Noted. But let's see how we do. I'm curious to know if the actions you took at Salient, for all they accomplished, were at the behest of Commander Krennic."
Hass regarded the Moff for a long moment, wondering just how much he knew.
"Sudden amnesia?" Tarkin asked.
"Weighing my options,"
Hass said carefully.
"That suggests to me that you may still be under Krennic's orders."
"I'm not under anyone's orders."
Tarkin frowned.
"All those back-and-forth supply runs undertaken selflessly for a system that now belongs to the Empire?"
"Good luck with your detoxification and reseeding efforts."
Tarkin allowed a grin.
"If nothing else, Salient will serve as a jumping-off point for further strikes into the sector."
Hass felt his strength returning.
"The Empire won't stop until it reaches the edge of the galaxy. Is that it?"
"Why stop there?"
Tarkin asked.
He paced away from the cart, then turned. "The rest of your little band of mercenaries managed to escape, but will eventually root them out."
"Don't be too sure. They're very good at what they do."
Tarkin's smile straightened.
"Assuming you're being honest regarding Commander Krennic, I'd be interested to know what swayed you to join the other side after what you helped bring about at Samovar and Wadi."
Hass winced. So Krennic and Tarkin had been in league from the start.
"What difference does it make?"
"Did Commander Krennic betray you? Or is it that you fell out of favor with him?"
Hass's laugh became a harsh cough.
"There's a way of looking at it where he's responsible for my change of heart," he said when he could. "But since you're so curious, what changed me was a trip I took with a couple of human women."
Tarkin came to a full stop a meter from the foot of the cot.
"Now I am intrigued. These two women somehow helped open your eyes, your heart. What part of you?"
Hass decided not to deny it. "To the effect the Empire's actions are having on the lives of people who still care."
Disappointment pulled down the corners of Tarkin's mouth. "Please, Captain, let's try to refrain from naivete. Where did you and your human companions venture on this life-altering voyage?" Hass began to wonder if Tarkin had drugged him with truth serum. Even if not, there was a chance, however slim, that honest answers could buy him leniency. "We started at Alpen." "I'm familiar with Alpen." Hass wasn't surprised. Tarkin seemed to have a handle on everything.
"The women did some surveying and mapping. They expressed an interest in visiting a few legacy worlds, so I took them to Samovar and Wadi Rafa."
"Took them to see what you had done, you mean?" Tarkin grinned. "How self-cleansing that must have been for you."
"Their reactions forced me to take a hard look at myself."
Tarkin gazed at him. "I honestly don't know whether to laugh or shed a tear. Here I've been thinking of you as a talented smuggler and able mercenary, and now I learn that you're more a sentimental chaperone."
Hass tried to prop himself higher on the cot.
"The chaperoning was Commander Krennic's idea."
Tarkin's brows quirked in renewed interest. "Whatever for?"
Hass gave up on struggling against the cuffs.
"The idea was to make sure they didn't get into any trouble. One of them is the wife of an important scientist, and I had history with the family."
"What scientist?" Tarkin said, hardening his gaze.
"His name is Galen Erso."
Tarkin's eyes widened in genuine revelation,
and he brought his fingers to his chin.
"The energy specialist."
Hass didn't answer immediately.
Had he lucked onto finding common ground with the Moth?
"You know him?"
he asked finally.
"What history do you have with the Ursos?"
"I assisted in rescuing them from Vault during the war. That's when I first met Commander Krennic. I didn't know that Erso was still involved with Krennic, because it seemed to me at the time that Erso wanted no part of anything military."
Tarkin didn't bother to mask his surprise.
"Galen Erso is working with Commander Krennic?"
"Lyra, his wife, said so."
Tarkin blinked. "So it's Erso who's responsible for that new set of rank squares on his tunic,"
he said, mostly to himself. Hass instantly regretted his disclosures.
Had he put Lyra and Jin in danger by shooting off his mouth?
Whatever the source of the obvious rivalry between the two Imperials, Galen Erso seemed to be a part of it.
Tarkin was grinning at him.
"You and I have both been played by a rather brilliant strategist. Commander Krennic reconnected you with Lyra Erso to spur your treachery at Salient, and your treachery here has drawn me into Krennic's duplicity."
Hass's thoughts raced. Was there some way to warn Lyra?
Tarkin was regarding him once more, clearly in the midst of doing some strategizing of his own.
"You've caused me a good deal of trouble, Captain," the Moth said at long last. "But I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself."
In Jin's room, which Galen had swept for listening devices, he sat in concentrated silence at the compact computers and holoprojectors he had relocated from elsewhere in the facility. Lyra paced nervously behind, waiting for him to deliver a verdict. A standard week had passed since their hushed conversation on the footpaths, and Nari's holodata reports regarding Malpaz and Hippori had arrived only standard hours earlier. In Lyra's brief conversation with her friend, Nari had said that Hippori was as far a jump as she had ever taken, and not a world she was eager to revisit, using the words vile and corrupt to describe what she had seen. But Nari hadn't speculated on any of the images or readings recorded by the survey ship's sensors, and Lyra hadn't asked. Nari was already too deeply involved in what might be construed as a conspiracy or espionage, and Lyra didn't want to provide her and Galen's unseen watchers with more ammunition than they already had.
"Hippori wasn't phased out,"
Galen said finally.
It was destroyed.
Anarchists, Lyra started to say when he cut her off.
Not by anarchists or separatist holdouts, but by Imperial Star Destroyer-grade super-lasers.
Galen turned away from the humming, chirping devices to look at her.
It's more accurate to say that the installation was scoured.
Lyra had come to a standstill and was regarding him in astonishment.
But we know it was a celestial power facility.
Galen's nod confirmed it.
There's no doubt about that.
Then why would the Empire destroy one of its own installations? Was there some sort of contaminant leak? Galen motioned to the bank of instruments.
There's no evidence of that.
Maybe to keep the place from falling into the hands of insurgents. Galen nodded again.
It's a pleasant fantasy.
He gestured to a hollow running above one of the hollow projectors.
Hyporia hosts a former Bactoid armor droid factory that might date to 10 or maybe as many as 30 standard years before the war. That facility is still more or less intact, possibly even operational. But everything around it, including a couple of newer, retrofitted structures, was laid to waste.
Can you tell when it happened?
Recently. So recently the area is still hot. I'd guess within a couple of standard weeks, not more than a month.
Galen fell briefly silent. Lyra recalled the Star Destroyer she had observed at Samovar, bringing its turbo lasers to bear on vast areas of pristine forest.
Malpaz also?
She asked hesitantly. Galen's expression went from disconsolate to angry.
Malpaz's destruction owes at least in part to Kyber crystal diffraction.
She gaped at him.
But you told me...
I know what I told you. The same thing that Orson told me. That anarchists were responsible.
But it was all a lie.
He gritted his teeth.
They've been attempting to weaponize my research.
Galen, she said, as if all the air had gone out of her. He swung back to the screens and holo projectors.
Neither Malpaz nor Hippori was an energy facility. They were weapons research sites. The comps have been able to recognize what were once the collimator shafts of immense lasers, focusing coils, and energy inducers.
He shook his head back and forth.
But it's all beginning to make sense now. The vanishing shipments of dolovite and dunium, Orson's delay in furnishing me with data on the energy experiments, the test fires for all I know, perhaps even his mention during the war of the unique military installation he was working on.
He shut his eyes and blew out his breath.
I've been a fool, Lyra.
Equally distraught, she rested her hand on his shoulder.
You couldn't have known. We couldn't have known.
He shot her a look.
No? If I hadn't been so blind.
Is it possible that even Orson isn't aware of some of this? Or is that wishing for too much?
Galen stood and strode away from the devices.
He's coming here, he said with sudden force, pivoting to face her.
He made it sound like just another social call, but I think he wants to check on us. If you're right about surveillance, then he knows that both of us have been trying to get to the truth.
She took her lower lip between her teeth.
What can we do?
He thought about it, then said,
We can allay his suspicions.
How?
I think we can safely admit to having some concerns, but we don't theorize about disappearances. We underplay everything.
Galen narrowed his eyes at her.
Can you do that?
Lyra firmed her lips. The destruction visited on Malpaz and Hippori didn't explain the disappearances of Degio and Riva. Was that Galen's ultimate fate?
Was it theirs?
I'll certainly try, she told him.
Chapter 27. End of Proof.
Krennic arrived late, and without any bottles of vintage wine, but in the company of two stormtroopers who remained at the facility landing zone with the airspeeder. On seeing him, Jin refused to leave her room, so Lyra left her in the care of McVee. She might not have been able to articulate her reasons for disliking Krennic, but her wariness was plain as day. All Species Week has made the traffic even worse than normal, he said, by way of explanation and apology, once the three of them were seated in the residence's upper-story sitting room, Coruscant cityscape sparkling outside the tall windows.
I only hope I haven't ruined the evening entirely.
No problem, Orson, Galen said. We appreciate your visiting.
Krennic lifted an eyebrow and dumped the friendly tone. Do you? As busy as both of you have been? Galen forced a smile.
The research and Jin keep us on our feet.
Yes. How is the child? Krennic asked, all but sneering. Into everything, I'll bet.
Lyra spoke to it.
She's very inquisitive.
Krennic smiled without showing his teeth.
So like her parents.
I'm thinking about taking her to visit my mother on Aria Prime, Lyra went on.
Krennic looked at her.
Indeed. Well, be sure to let me know if you require any assistance in arranging travel. Even though the space lanes are essentially safe, one should take care where one ventures.
The subtext wasn't lost on her. With anarchists and all, she said. I tried to convince Galen to come along, but he won't leave his work. Krennic nodded gravely in Galen's direction.
The Empire values dedication. Especially when it's unquestioning.
His gaze returned to Lyra.
Still, it's important to make time for family and friends.
She kept her response neutral.
Where would any of us be without friendship?
Speaking of which, Krennic said, were you ever successful in contacting Riva Domain?
I recall you asking after her, Galen, and I haven't been able to track her down.
It's the strangest thing, Lyra answered for him. But she's nowhere to be found.
Krennic appeared to ponder it.
I wonder if she left or was dismissed from the program.
Degio Belcos, then Riva,
Galen interjected.
I guess research isn't for everyone.
Certainly not for the faint of heart or the unfaithful, Krennic told him.
If memory serves, Riva was on Hippori last.
That's where she was when she calmed us,
Lyra said, unable to stop herself.
What sort of facility does celestial power have there?
Krennic glowered at her.
At the moment, none. An industrial accident required that it be shut down.
Lyra feigned surprise.
That's terrible.
Quite, Krennic said.
The Empire had a lot invested in the place.
Lyra locked eyes with him.
Any luck in identifying the ones responsible for destroying Malpass?
Not yet.
Why do you ask?
Curiosity.
Hardly an appropriate justification for discussing matters of Imperial security.
I know what I risk by asking,
Lyra said before Galen could cut her off.
Sudden color mottled Krennic's face. I'm finding that harder and harder to believe.
I'm just wondering if we're in any danger, Lyra said.
You, personally?
As employees of celestial power, I mean.
Krennic put his elbows on his knees and leaned forward.
Are you actually frightened, Lyra?
Or is this another ploy to undermine the work Galen is doing?
She's not trying to undermine anything, Orson, Galen said. She's simply concerned.
Krennic kept his eyes on Lyra.
As what?
A mother? A wife? Or a troublemaker?
Orson, Galen started to say, I'm sorry, but we're not playing some parlor game tonight. I arranged for the expedition to Alpen because I wanted Lyra to feel included in the program. But instead of confining herself to the assignment, what do she and her friend do but jump around the western reaches, visiting worlds the Empire is mining for resources critical to celestial power? And now she's worried about anarchists.
He riveted his eyes on her.
Lyra Erso,
galactic detective. You should know better. He glanced at Galen. Both of you should know better.
Just assure us that Daegyo and Reva are safe, Galen said.
Krennic touched his chest. Are you implying that I had some hand in removing them from the program?
Of course not, Lyra said.
But Reva wouldn't simply leave without telling us. Krennic firmed his lips. I honestly can't say where she is.
Can't say or don't know, Lyra pressed.
Enough of this, Galen said in a rush. Lyra, Orson isn't obliged to breach a security oath just because we have questions. He looked at Krennic. Still, you can't blame us for having concerns.
Perhaps if I was convinced it was mere concern, Krennic said.
Galen shook his head. I don't understand. Don't you see what Lyra's really trying to do? She's using these alleged concerns to persuade you to abandon your research. Her goal is to keep you to herself, to stand in the way of your legacy.
Legacy?
Lyra repeated in genuine bafflement. Orson, please! Galen said, completely unnerved. We only want to be reassured that we're not being lied to and that we're not in any danger. Instead of responding to Galen, Krennic addressed Lyra. You have no idea what you're fooling with. This is much bigger than me.
This is much bigger than all three of us.
I warned you not to go down this path.
But I guess another warning is in order, Orson, Galen said.
Krennic was taken off his guard, but not for long.
So you confided in him that we had a chat?
Lyra shrugged.
I told you that we don't keep things from each other.
Back on track, Krennic nodded.
Precisely the reason I approached you.
His gaze shifted to Galen.
I knew that Lyra had reservations about your research with Kybers, and I was worried that her concerns might prompt you to compromise your security oath as a means of justifying your work. I couldn't abide the thought of you ending up in prison again, so I cautioned her that prying could lead to questions regarding her loyalty. But I did so only for her own sake. You should have come to me,
Galen said, sounding more dejected than angry.
You have my deepest apologies, Krennic said in a calmer voice. I sensed that you were nearing a breakthrough, and I was merely trying to keep you from being distracted.
He paused for a long moment, then added, I was wrong to interfere, and had I known you were setting a trap for me, I certainly would have postponed this visit. Galen rose to prevent Krennic from standing. This wasn't meant to be a trap, and I understand why you took the actions you did. We needed to have this talk to clear the air.
He turned to Lyra.
Can we be done with this now? I'm sure that Orson was only doing what he felt was right.
Krennic relaxed somewhat. Thank you for your trust, Galen. I give you my word that I'll put all your concerns to rest.
Lyra allowed a nod.
I feel so much better,
she said straight-faced. Traffic was crawling almost at a standstill, even in the skylanes reserved for authorized vehicles. Fireworks displays erupted overhead, and lasers crisscrossed on the sides of buildings. Blaring, grating sounds issued from vehicle horns and wind instruments, and songs in 24 tongues competed with one another. Glittering metallic confetti rained down from rooftops and balconies, and being danced with abandon wherever they could find space. Krennic brooded in the back seat of the open military speeder, his two stormtroopers up front, while from all sides came celebratory hoots and hollers from Twi'lek, Gran, Rodians, Ishi-Tib, even some humans. The cacophony of nighttime Coruscant at the climax of All Species Week mirrored his internal chaos. Angry one moment, betrayed the next, concerned, cornered, vindictive. The evening hadn't gone as planned. Galen had defused the situation before it had turned too ugly or explosive, but the damage had been done,
and Krennic could only hope that it wasn't irreparable. Lyra had truly outdone herself, gone from being merely annoying to potentially dangerous in one fell swoop. Despite that, she could be handled. Her suspicions would never see the light of day. And if Krennic had his way, neither would she. Her allegations could be turned against her, and Compnor would take care of the rest. But what of Galen? Even if he could find it in himself not to hold Krennic accountable, would he be willing to continue his work? Would he be capable of finishing what he had started, and one day be brought into the battle station project? Galen's departure from the project would be on his watch. Compnor's intelligence chiefs would say that he should have been keeping closer tabs on Galen and Lyra. He would be reprimanded for having sent Lyra to Alpin, for not having reported on her activities at Samovar and Wadi Rafa, for failing to have restricted her access to the Celestial Power database. Even in the face of support from Vizier Amida and other powerful Imperial players, he might be stripped of his rank and ostracized. He closed his eyes and refused to consider the implications. There had to be a way forward. He wondered how far he was willing to go to resolve matters. Could Lyra and Jin be quietly removed? Could Galen be relocated? What if an accident of some sort occurred? What if... He shook his head as if to clear such thoughts from his mind. As he did, the stormtrooper in the front passenger seat turned to him.
Commander, incoming from Governor Tarkin.
Krennic hid his consternation. Of all the times for Tarkin to contact him, Tarkin, who would be the first to gloat if Krennic went down?
Governor Tarkin, he said toward the backseat microphone, forcing himself to sound relaxed, even cheery. What a surprise to hear from you. I only just learned of your victory at Salient.
Hard fought but accomplished, Commander. You're on Coruscant, I see.
Admired in traffic. The culmination of all Species Week.
Unfortunate. But I'm glad to find you there, as something of interest has come to our attention.
Krennic adjusted his posture in the pleated bench seat.
Something I can help with?
We hope so. It concerns your Dresselian operative, Hass Obit.
Krennic uttered a short laugh.
Hardly an operative, Governor. More a dummy. And a traitor, I understand. I would be relieved to learn that he and his fellow smugglers have been eliminated or placed in custody.
We thought we had him cornered,
Tarkin said.
But he managed to commandeer a small ship and escape.
Krennic took a moment to appreciate the fact that reversals weren't exclusive to him.
I never would have thought him clever enough to outwit you, Governor. But I'm certain he'll turn up in one haunt or another.
His kind always do.
Then you're done with him?
Krennic frowned.
Of course I am. What would lead you to think otherwise?
Tarkin was quiet for a moment.
We intercepted an Imperial frequency message transmitted from the stolen ship. We haven't been able to identify the person or persons at the destination end, but it seems that Obit is en route to Coruscant.
He's coming here.
We wondered whether he was still in your service as a double agent and might be meeting with you to receive new orders.
With me?
Krennic's irritation was genuine.
After what he pulled at Salient, I want no part of him.
Have it your way, Commander. The transmission was garbled, but we were able to deduce that he's arranging to meet with unknown parties at some pre-assigned location.
I'm afraid I'm drawing a blank, Governor. But I will do what I can to locate him.
Krennic sat in silence with the information, his thoughts loud enough to drown out the raucous partying in nearby vehicles. On the run from Tarkin, Obit was racing to a prearranged location on Coruscant. Either he was desperate to connect with cohorts, or a sinister feeling took hold of him.
Could Lyra have reached out to the Dresselian for help? Had Galen and Lyra tricked him? Had the evening been set up simply to satisfy their curiosity, when in fact they had already made up their minds to bolt? Krennic rubbed one hand across his mouth while the other went to the comm. Then he reconsidered. Ordering the facility into lockdown might tip them off. Plus, if he was rushing to judgment, a lockdown would only give Lyra another reason to distrust him. A better course would be to show up unannounced. He would say that in thinking through the conversation, he realized that he hadn't explained himself adequately. He could apologize again, state that he couldn't leave the things the way they were. In the interest of saving their relationship, he would even be willing to violate his security oath. That just might do it. He tapped the stormtrooper pilot on the shoulder. Get us out of this jam. We're returning to the facility.
They've gone, Lyra said, as she watched Orson's airspeeder lift off from the facility landing zone and insert into one of the crowded traffic lanes. Galen was sitting on the couch, his head in his hands. All he did was counterattack and talk around everything we brought up. Instead of denying everything, he deflected. Even when he claimed not to know where Riva and Degio are, he looked up at Lyra. He's complicit, if not responsible. I'm sorry, Galen, she told him. I know how much this facility means to you, but at least we're closer to learning the truth. He shook his head. There is no one truth. We're both right. We're both wrong. There are truths and falsehoods on both sides. It's irrelevant whether he had any part in what happened to our friends or to the facilities. We're never going to learn the full story. There's simply too much at stake. Galen stopped mid-sentence, then added, What matters is that I can't do this anymore. What choice do we have? Lyra asked carefully. There comes a point where an oath's not justification enough for silence.
Galen shot to his feet and stormed away from her. Galen? She said, following him. He came to a stop, but kept his back to her.
I'm the one who provided them with what they needed to weaponize the research. I played into their hands.
You? When?
After Malpass. After I bought into Orson's lie about anarchists and the Emperor's dreams for sustainable energy. I agreed to go deeper into the research than I knew was advisable. I trusted Orson when he said that his teams were working on ways to contain the power yield, when in fact, they were merely working on ways to channel it into a delivery system, to harness the full force of the Kyber's destructive power for use as a weapon. He raked his hair back from his face. The Jedi were right. Lyra felt the blood drain from her face. Star Destroyers and Dreadnoughts aren't enough for the Empire? Who knows what order of weapon they're working on, or who they're planning to target? Krennic said that the Emperor wants to make an example of one world. Maybe that wasn't entirely a lie. Lyra forced a weary exhale. It must have been some sales pitch, Galen. For you to betray your own sense of caution and respect for the crystals. He turned to face her. I had myself convinced that I was doing it for you and Jin, and to safeguard future generations. Instead, I failed as a husband, a father, and a scientist.
He snorted in a sad way, then said, I can't do anything about being a failed scientist, but I can correct the rest. If it's not too late.
She smiled in encouragement. Don't be an idiot. I didn't fall in love with your research, Galen. I fell in love with you.
He took her into his embrace and held her tightly, saying into her ear, I love you and Jin. You're all that matter to me.
He's back, she thought, resting her head against his chest. I know I made matters worse with Orson. We may be in more danger than before.
That's why we're leaving. She pulled away to regard him. We need to go now, whilst the last thing Orson would expect us to do, Galen said. I refuse to live my life under terms dictated by the Empire. She swallowed hard and looked into his eyes. I wasn't going to say anything until you'd made up your mind. He let his puzzlement show. Say anything about what? We may have a way out. Galen waited for the rest. A friend contacted me. It seems I'm not the only one who's worried about our safety. You trust him? Completely. He contacted you here? Through the facility comm? Through my personal comm link. Then we have to work fast to arrange things, Galen said. Where is it? Prizing the comm link from her pant pocket, she handed it to him, and he went immediately to the facility console, where he began inputting data. Lyra came to his side to watch him. Galen, Orson will know if you delete or alter anything. He nodded while he entered commands. That's the idea.
Even screeching sirens and threats of physical violence weren't enough to speed their return to the facility. On the landing pad, Krennic ordered the stormtroopers to seal the exits and hurried into the darkened building. Despite the late hour, researchers and droids were still about as he made his way to the turbolifts that accessed the residential area, and from those, he went directly to the Urso's apartment. His explanations and apologies rehearsed and committed to memory. He straightened his shoulders and tunic and signaled the security cam to announce him. A long moment passed before the door slid aside, and a humaniform MV droid appeared in the doorway. Are the Urso still awake? He said.
They may well be, sir,
the droid told him. Krennic stepped into the suite.
Tell Galen that I'm here.
I am unable to, sir, as I am unaware of Galen's current whereabouts.
And Lyra?
None of the Ursos are here, sir.
Krennic activated his wrist comm. Check with security to see if anyone has left the facility in the past 3 hours, he said when one of the stormtroopers answered. If no one has left, then conduct a search of the grounds. He shoved past the droid and began a search of his own. The two bedrooms were empty, but the closets and drawers were filled with clothing and nothing looked disturbed except Jin's bed. He returned to the main room and hurried to the communications board. The console had just acknowledged his clearance when his wrist comm chimed.
The Ursos left the grounds 2 hours ago, Commander. By way of the front gate,
the stormtrooper said.
They told the guards that they were going out to join in the celebration.
With a child at this hour? Krennic grated.
It's what they told the guards, sir.
Widen your search. Download their images into your comm link and get the local authorities involved. I don't want them apprehended. Just monitor them and await further orders from me.
Yes, sir.
Krennic was trying to keep from fearing the worst, but his instincts told him that Galen was in flight. Quickly he read through the comm station's message queue for the previous 2 standard weeks. The queue listed Orson's calls to Galen and multiple calls placed by Lyra, to her mother, to her friend Nari, to other friends, to Hippori. Krennic ground his teeth in anger. Then his gaze alighted on a text that had been received a day earlier from an unknown sender. Recalled to a screen, it read, "If you're at all interested in embarking on another tour, I'm at your disposal. If you wish, it can be a family outing this time." The log showed that additional messages had been exchanged, but they had been purged from the system, which only Galen had the clearance to do. Krennic whirled away from the console and went to the living room, his eyes moving from the couch to the chairs in a replay of the evening's conversation, all three of them in a time warp of his imagining. Then he thought about Hass Obit and the pre-assigned location he was bound for. He ran through the possibilities. Had Galen and his family left from the local spaceport? Had they hired a private speeder? No sky cab would have been allowed to land on the grounds or the rooftop landing zones. It would have to have been waiting outside the entrance. All the while he had been bogged down in traffic, the Ursos had been crawling toward the central district to meet with Obit. Again, he activated his wrist comm. The facility is to be placed on full lockdown. No one in or out, and no one is allowed access to any internal or external communications or databases.
Alert Compnor that we're going to need a team of expert slicers to extract everything we can from the research computers.
Will we be remaining on site, Commander?
Negative, Krennic told the stormtrooper. We're heading soonest to the Central District spaceport, in low orbit if we have to, and order the rest of the squad to meet us there.
Galen couldn't recall a time when he had seen more people on the walkways, the rooftops, the balconies and terraces, everyone celebrating without restraint. Lyra had gin in her arms, the poor kid still in pajamas and struggling to remain asleep, despite the welter of tongues, the fireworks, and general revelry. Caught up in the sweep of the crowd, he said,
I guess there's no fighting it.
That's Coruscant for you.
We'll never get there on time.
On time only means getting there without being caught, Lyra said. Otherwise he'll wait for us. That's the plan.
Just how long have you been working on this?
Since yesterday.
How could you be sure it wasn't a trap?
Something Orson set for you.
I wasn't sure at first, but he convinced me everything was on the level.
You told me what you and Jin had to go through when you left for Alpin. Getting off Coruscant isn't going to be like walking out of the facility. We might be on a no-fly list. We don't even have travel permits.
I was told not to worry and that everything would be arranged even at a moment's notice. This isn't going to be Vault all over again.
Galen absorbed her words as the crowd moved them along. The bigger mystery is how you knew I'd be willing to go along with it.
I hoped our conversation with Orson would convince you to leave. If that failed, then I was going to try to talk you into it.
She paused, then asked, Do you think he'll find the message?
It's Orson. Of course he will.
And the ones you altered?
Some of them.
He'll bring in forensic specialists to help. And the Kaiba research?
Galen tapped the side of his head. That's in here.
And here, he added, tapping the notebook in the pouch pocket of his trousers. You could have at least made him work to get the current data.
He's welcome to whatever he finds. I could have sabotaged everything, but I don't want to give the Empire a reason to hunt us down. We're simply dropping out, although covertly. Besides, what I left will keep them occupied for a while.
Revenge was never your style.
Galen considered it. Orson may have worked me, but he didn't force me.
They continued to edge through the crowds, Galen employing a program on his comlink to alert them to police activity and fixed and mobile facial recognition cams.
Will they have enough data to build a superweapon?
Galen shook his head.
Not without me.
You realize that he's never going to stop looking for you, Galen. You're in his blood. Crystal researcher, no. He's never going to let go of you entirely.
Galen took a long moment to digest that. Then, we'll have to travel far, he started to say, before coming to a sudden halt and frowning at the comlink screen. The program has crashed.
Crashed, or... She cut herself off on seeing her and Galen's faces resolved 10 times larger than life on a nearby building's newsfeed screen. Gazing around to get her bearings, she said,
We need to go down 3 levels, turn right, then left, and turbo up to Republic Plaza. It'll be easier to mix in there.
You've been mapping the territory?
Galen asked as he followed on her heels. Lyra hefted Jin in her arms.
Long walks were the only way I could get her to sleep.
The last thing they saw, before disappearing into the turbo lift, was a police speeder, spiraling down out of the busy night sky to set down 50 meters away. Cleared for landing on Coruscant, Hass, flying solo, maneuvered the ship toward a hangar on the outskirts of the Central District spaceport.
Traffic was heavy in every direction at every elevation, but the Zirpan-built craft, outfitted with a superb hyperdrive and military-grade deflector shields, was more agile than the one Imperial forces had buried under metric tons of rock on Salient 1. As he drew closer to the hangar from which he, Lyra, Jin, and Nari had embarked for Alpen so many standard months earlier, he asked himself why, on leaving Salient, he hadn't simply jumped to the farthest reaches of the Tingle Arm instead of returning to the core. He wanted to believe that the answer had something to do with being true to his word, but it was more a case of being caught between Tarkin and Krennic. Betraying one or the other could lead to imprisonment or worse, so his options were limited indeed. Tarkin's terms of redemption called for Haas to talk his way back into Krennic's good graces and serve as Tarkin's inside man and listening device, rightly assuming that Haas wouldn't risk double-crossing the Moth by lighting out for the rim. Haas, though, had persuaded him to send a message that would make his return to Coruscant appear credible. That much accomplished, he had jumped the Zirpan ship directly for the core, putting other plans into play while en route. Trusting the ship to autopilot, he relaxed into the pilot seat, working the kinks out of his shoulders and running through the next few moves. Thanks to the time he'd spent in the Bacta tank, he was back to feeling healthy and strong. But he was going to need to be sharper than usual to succeed. Krennic wasn't just astute. He could see around corners, and there was no telling how he would react to seeing his own stooge again. The ship eased through the hangar's open irised roof and settled on its landing gear. He waited for the systems to shut down before shrugging out of the harness, then left the cockpit for the boarding ramp, which was already lowering. His boots had just hit the hangar's concrete floor when Krennic appeared from around the stern of the ship, backed by a squad of stormtroopers with blast techs raised. Haas let his jaw drop as the Imperial officer approached.
"Clearly you're surprised to see me, Captain."
"You have that right, Commander," Haas managed.
"Not the passengers you were expecting?"
Haas tilted his head in question.
"Passengers? I wasn't expecting anyone to be waiting. How in the world did you know I was coming?"
"Governor Tarkin intercepted your transmission."
Haas cursed under his breath. "And here I thought I'd made a clean getaway."
"Of all beings, Obit, you should know that there's no escaping the long arm of the Empire."
"You're right, Commander. But I'm awfully glad to see you just the same."
Krennic mimicked Haas's earlier head tilt, signaled for his cadre of troopers to lower their weapons, and took a few steps toward the ship's ramp.
"Admit that you've come here to assist the Ursos in leaving."
"The Ursos?"
"I know that you've been communicating with Lyra."
"Lyra? I haven't exchanged a word with her since the expedition. Why would I?"
"You're denying that you offered her assistance?"
Haas shook his head in bafflement.
"I wouldn't know how to find her even if I wanted to."
Krennic scrutinized him.
"Then why are you here?" "To see you, Commander."
When Krennic didn't respond, he added,
"I'm in desperate straits. I need your protection."
Krennic continued to regard him.
"You dare come to me after your betrayal at Salient?" "But I didn't betray you," Haas said in a rush. "None of us did. Zirpan refused to allow us to set down on the Epiphany Moon and dispatch some of their fighters to scuttle us. Then Tarkin showed up and sicked his starfighters on us as well. We spent the whole of his campaign at Salient being chased all over the system, from moon to planet and back again. In the end, he nearly caught up with me, but I managed to seize this ship and escape."
Krennic tried to digest it. "Who is on the receiving end of your transmission about coming here?"
"One of my confederates."
"Just another smuggler.
We've a date to meet at a level 5 cantina. Then I was hoping to find some way to contact you."
Krennic called one of his stormtroopers forward and ordered him to check the ship's log.
I had no other choice,
Hass went on.
Oh, I suppose I could have tried to hide. But I'm not interested in living out my days as a fugitive. I thought maybe you could help me. For old time's sake?
Old time's sake, Krennic said.
For services rendered? However you want to label what I did during the war and since.
Krennic was chewing it over when the stormtrooper reappeared.
The log's clean, Commander. No comma with Coruscant. Only the original transmission monitored by Governor Tarkin.
Krennic listened, then shot Hass a gimlet look.
You're lying to me, Captain.
With a downcast look, Hass gestured broadly to the hangar.
If I am Commander, then where are the Ursos?
Galen was carrying Jin in his arms as the three of them arrived at the small spaceport that had been built close to the former refuge to serve needs of the Celestial Power Complex. Travelers of many species were huddled at the terminal entrances and exits, most of them heading for or returning from distant parts of Coruscant now that the week-long celebration was finally winding down. Three times the normal number of police had been deployed to deal with the throngs, but stormtroopers were circulating as well, seemingly on the search for beings of interest. Galen and Lyra kept to the thick of the crowds. His eyes darting left and right, up and down, he would signal her when they were within range of a facial recognition cam or a probe droid, and they would bow their heads and allow themselves to be carried on the living tide. They came to a halt well short of the first security checkpoint, and extricated themselves to a parcel of open space along the terminal's front wall.
I don't think we can risk going through,
Galen said, shifting Jin in his arms.
If our absence has been reported, our identichips will trigger alarms all over the terminal. What was the plan?
There was no plan other than to reach the spaceport.
No destination, concourse, or hangar?
Lyra shook her head.
That leaves us no choice but to go through security. What's the worst that can happen?
It's not like we're breaking any laws.
Orson may have something to say about that, Galen. Besides, there are ways to avoid going through security.
Then I'll tell him we were frightened, Galen went on, as if he hadn't heard her.
We panicked and decided to spend time in the apartment.
Lyra offered a faint smile.
That actually sounds reasonable. But he'll see through it. There'll be consequences.
Galen nodded.
We'll still have one play left.
Me. If they want my help, they'll need to play by my rules.
I wouldn't count on it.
He squeezed her hand and kissed her on the cheek. They were two steps from merging with the crowd streaming toward the checkpoint when a tall, thin human with a streak of color in his thick black hair stepped into their path.
I'm a friend of Ovid's,
the man announced in his self-assured voice. Galen looked at Lyra.
You're from Onderon, she said as instructed.
Onderon it is.
The man smiled broadly.
I'm called Saw Gerrera. You're Lyra, Galen, and...
Jin,
Galen said, stroking his daughter's hair.
Good to meet all of you.
Lyra directed a glance at the security checkpoint.
Do we go through, Saw?
He frowned and shook his head.
We need to find some other way.
Where did you put down? Lyra asked.
He motioned with his chin.
The ship's at the eastern edge of the field.
Near the Warsi Tower or closer to the Saul Skyway Terminal?
The tower,
Saul said. Lyra narrowed her eyes in thought, then nodded.
I know a route.
Saul grinned broadly.
Hass told me I could count on you.
With Galen's permission, he took Jin into his arms and motioned for Lyra to assume the point.
Just don't lose us.
Smiling at him over her shoulder, she said, We have a ship to catch, and hurried off. Krennic stormed from the hangar into the air of nighttime Coruscant and passed a long moment gazing at the traffic lifting off, arriving, traveling to distant areas of the planet.
Had he been tricked, or had he tricked himself?
the Ursos hadn't returned to the facility. Thus far, their images hadn't been captured by any facial recognition cams, and their identichips hadn't been scanned at any stores, facilities, public transport stations, or security checkpoints. Was it possible they had simply gone out for the night? He knew better than to hope. They had escaped out from under him. Beings had been known to hide on Coruscant for a lifetime, but Galen wouldn't be one of them. He wouldn't be able to stay away from his research. He would have a change of heart. He would turn himself in. He would reach out. The anger and despair he had felt in the airspeeder returned and settled on him like a great weight.
"Galen,"
he said, as if orphaned. Then,
"Galen!"
shouting into the busy sky. Chapter 28. Transposed. Returned at last to his old stomping ground, Hass sat quietly with his drink, deciding that even the music sounded good. Rumor had it that he had died at Salient. So on stepping into the wanton wellspring, he received what had amounted to a hero's welcome. Friends and former shipmates insisting on buying him drinks, and his lovely Dresselian dream girl surprising him with a kiss that lingered. Even now, after months of traveling about, he wasn't sure to whom he owed his good fortune. Perhaps the Ursos, or Will of Tarkin. In some ways, Krennic figured into things as well. But probably Tarkin most of all. If Tarkin hadn't been willing to trust that Hass would willingly serve as his spy, he would never have been able to contact Lyra and arrange for Saul to remove them from what Hass perceived as danger born of Tarkin's obvious competition with Orson Krennic. Krennic, however, hadn't simply allowed him to leave Coruscant after their reunion at the spaceport hangar. At least, not immediately. He had kept Hass locked away until the story of his escape from Salient could be substantiated. And Tarkin had been only too happy to oblige, since by then he had come to think of Hass as his inside man. In short order, then, Hass was back in the commander's employ and tasked with hunting down the missing Ursos, progress on which he had furnished to both Krennic and Tarkin, confident that the two would never have cause to compare notes. The Ursos had been identified by cams at a spaceport near the former Bancor refuge, but there was no record of them having passed through security. A thorough study of departing traffic had revealed that a starship had launched shortly after cams had acquired the Ursos' images, but the ship's signature was unknown and no trace of it had been found. The fact that the ship had been ID'd multiple times at Salient by Tarkin's forces had clearly escaped Krennic's notice, probably owing to Tarkin's reluctance to share information of any sort with his rival in the Corps of Engineers, or in whatever branch of the military Krennic was actually enlisted. Several messages had been teased from the Celestial Power Communication Suite, but the most tantalizing of them, those exchanged between Hass and Lyra, had been relayed through so many HoloNet transceivers that the origin sources couldn't be pinpointed. Krennic, however, had focused on Lyra's friend Nari Sable as the person most likely to have helped the Ursos complete their flight. In keeping with the search for the Ursos, Hass had located Nari, but the comely surveyor had been able to provide her Imperial investigators with an alibi and had been released soon after being questioned. So Hass had devoted the next several standard months to following up on leads as to the Ursos' whereabouts, which in fact had meant applying himself diligently to not finding them, even going so far as to avoid having any contact with former Onderanian freedom fighter Saw Gerrera, out of concern that Hass's communications were being secretly monitored by Krennic or Tarkin. Sipping from his drink, Hass wasn't entirely convinced that he had accomplished something worthwhile, but it sure felt that way. More, he was close to being back on his own after years of executing the commands of others, and as free as anyone could be in the ever-expanding empire. Despite being unemployed, without a crew, and still having to transmit the odd lack of progress reports to Krennic and Tarkin. Lyra had been right when she told him during their final communication that the Force worked in mysterious ways. Finishing his drink, he stood and walked to the bar, where the Dresselian server who had kissed him was busy trying to chat up a customer. Sidling up alongside her, he said,
"What would you say to my taking you away from all this?"
Turning immediately from her target, she said, "It's about time, Obit." Her smile said the rest, and with arms linked, the two of them left the wanton wellspring in search of new horizons. Tarkin and a contingent of stormtroopers arrived at Sentinel Base in his personal ship, the Carrion Spike. A wind-scoured gray moon, the base and several others in the vicinity supervised supply shipments bound for Geonosis, where the battle station was still under construction. Some in the Imperial Court wondered why the Emperor had assigned one of his top moffs to control space traffic. But Tarkin wasn't there to safeguard the battle station so much as to keep an eye on Orson Krennic, who, despite recent obstacles, remained in charge of the Special Weapons Group. Wind-driven grit assaulted the cockpit viewports as Tarkin brought the ship down on the base's target-like landing field. As inhospitable as Sentinel was, the moon was preferable to the western reaches. Adjusting to a downside life after so many years spent aboard Star Destroyers would be the difficult part of the assignment. But gazing out on the complex of interconnected domes and hangars, Tarkin knew that he could endure a standard year or two there, if it meant furthering his goals. Hass Obit was still reporting to him on what he could glean of Krennic's activities, and of course, on the seemingly futile hunt for Galen Erso and his family. When the truth had emerged that Erso's research into kyber crystals had been weaponized without his knowledge, Tarkin wasn't surprised. Nor did he feel any real sympathy for the situation in which the scientist had placed himself. The need to serve the Empire superseded personal goals, and sometimes personal morals also. More to the point, Erso should have seen through Krennic the way Tarkin had. That Erso's disappearance would delay completion of the battle station superlaser was certainly regrettable, and would have to be remedied immediately. But not the fact that Krennic had been somewhat crippled by the scientist's unexpected departure. The headstrong and impulsive commander had been gaining too much prestige and influence with Vizier Masamida and other advisors, and Tarkin was gratified to see him taken down a notch. Fortunately, the Emperor agreed. Tarkin wasn't certain that Krennic's team of researchers and engineers would find a way to equip the battle station with a suitable weapon on their own, but that wasn't his concern at the moment. He would execute his new role and bide his time. Having succeeded in the Western Reaches and at Salient, he was a step closer to assuming command of the entire project. "I refuse to accept a demotion to Lieutenant Commander," Krennic told Amita in no uncertain terms. The pair were in the Vizier's temporary office in one of the original spires of the Jedi Temple, which was undergoing extensive renovations designed to transform it into the seat of the Imperial Court, complete with auditoriums, conference centers, and private landing fields. It was precisely the sort of project Krennic would have been supervising were it not for the battle station. and during the long walk to Amita's headquarters, he had recognized many of the current crew chiefs and foremen.
"It is hardly within your purview to reject a reduction in rank," the Shagrian told him.
Dressed in a white uniform that included a cap, capelet, and black gloves, Krennic was moving through the room like a storm. Few involved in the project are aware that the Ursos had disappeared. "Therefore, a demotion will be interpreted as my having committed some sort of blunder, which is an outright fabrication. I was Urso's handler, not his keeper."
Amita considered it.
"Have you been able to learn anything?"
"Only that the entire family managed to slip out under our very noses, and that there has been no sign of them since."
Amita's lanthorn stirred.
"What will you do without Galen?"
Krennic came to a sudden stop. His mouth was open, but no words emerged. Then he managed to say, "He's not the Empire's only genius crystallographer."
"That contradicts what you were telling me 4 years ago."
"Urso didn't tamper with any of the research data. Professor Sahali and Dr. Gubacker are confident that they can take up where he left off."
"At least they are still with us,"
Amita said, fixing Krennic in his gaze.
"Trust me, Vizier. We have, and perhaps beyond your abilities. There are some who think you should be here, in this building, supervising the renovations."
Krennic didn't believe it for a moment, and decided not to dignify the remark with a response.
"An overseer is certainly an order,"
Amita added.
Krennic snorted. "Is that why Tarkin has been assigned command of the Sentinel bases?"
Amita spread his large hands.
"He is merely there to safeguard against further setbacks. It pleases the Emperor to keep him close to you."
"That's Tarkin's job, to monitor me?"
"Not entirely, but should the need arise."
"It won't."
"Then the Emperor will be even more pleased."
Amita paused, then said,
"Finish what you started, Commander."
Krennic marched from Amita's office with 4 stormtroopers falling into formation behind him. A shudder went through him as he passed teams of droids at work in the wide, colonnaded hallway. He could hope that Amita had been persuaded to accept that the Special Weapons Group was picking up the slack. The fact was that work on the superlaser was stalled, and Galen's insights were needed more than ever. After all he had done for Galen, fame would have come to him, grandeur, legacy. Without his science, Galen was a non-entity. And Lyra. Flushed with anger, he peeled his gloves off as he walked and threw them violently to the polished floor.
He would leave no stone unturned in the search for them.
Jin stared out the front window of Saw Gerrera's spaceship. There were too many lights to count, but she knew that some of them were balls of fire, stars, and that others had houses and buildings, inhabitants, planets. Which one?
"It's too far away to see,"
Saw said. "But we can go there?"
"If your mom and dad want to."
"Through hooperspace."
He smiled at her.
"Hyperspace."
She corrected herself.
"Hyperspace."
"Should we go tell them what we found?"
"You can tell them."
She unfastened the restraints and put her boots on the deck. When Saw stood up from his seat, she reached out to take his hand, her small pink one and his big brown one, and they walked out of the cockpit together.
"Mama and Papa were standing by a window in the large cabin. Mama's arm was around Papa's waist, and his arm was around her waist. They smiled when they looked at her and Saw, and Papa bent down, opening his arms to her.
"Come here, Stardust," he said.
She hurried to him and he picked her up.
so that she was almost as tall as he was, but not as tall as Saul was.
"I think I found the perfect place," Saul told her parents. "Remote? A bit desolate, but tranquil."
He nodded his chin toward Jin.
"Plenty of room for this one to run around."
He pulled his datapad from his pant pocket and showed them the image of a green, black, and blue planet with a wide ring.
"It's called Lamu."
Papa looked at the image and said, "It looks unspoiled."
"It's getting harder and harder to find worlds the Empire hasn't swept into its grasp," Saw said.
"More and more star systems are knuckling under. More and more planets are being ravaged and sucked dry for resources. Lamu is one of the exceptions."
Papa carried her away from the window.
"What do you think, Stardust? Should Lamu be our new home?
Can Saw come and live with us?"
Papa looked at Saw and smiled.
"Saw is a very busy pilot. But I'm sure he'll visit us. Right, Saw?"
Saw nodded and made his eyes smile.
"Someone needs to keep an eye on you three."
He looked at Papa.
"I applaud you, Galen. I applaud all of you for taking a stand. You're my heroes. It's people like you who continue to inspire me to play a part in exposing the Empire's machinations."
He considered for a moment, now looking down at Jin.
"Not everyone understands the sacrifices necessary to stop them. If we don't use every opportunity, every secret, every weapon available to stop them, how can we face our children? How can we hand them a future filled with such injustice?"
Saw turned to Mama and handed her a flat metallic card like the ones Papa used in his work.
"In the meantime, take this comm card. It will allow you to contact me if you ever need my assistance."
Jin thought about her old bedroom on Coruscant.
"I miss MacVie, Mama."
Mama stretched out her hand to move the hair from her face.
"I miss him too, sweetheart. Maybe we can get a new MacVie."
Jin nodded, still thinking about the old MacVie. Mama looked at Papa without smiling.
"I guess we're just not cut out to be nomads after all," she said.
Papa nodded. He also wasn't smiling.
"Funny to hear you say that. But we're a team. We'll get through this."
"No regrets?"
Mama asked. Papa said,
"None."
Jin watched them and listened. She didn't know what the Empire was or who the Empire was, but Mama and Papa and Saw didn't like it. In some way, the Empire had made them leave behind all her toys and Mama's and Papa's clothes and other things. And MacVie, too, who would have nothing to do without them there. But she felt warm and safe in Papa's arms. And Saw was a new friend. Mama and Papa were good, and so was Saw. And so was she. Good like Bryn in the Octave Stairway.
If they tried hard enough, maybe they could find the home they were looking for.
Saw went back to the cockpit, and Mama and Papa and she stood at the window. Soon after, the lights in space shifted slightly, then turned to long lines, and Saw's ship jumped and disappeared into swirling gray hyperspace.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars Catalyst, a Rogue One novel by James Luceno. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars Catalyst is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2016. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music.
Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.